AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, back on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. Well, happy to welcome back a familiar face to the AM 950 airwaves. It's Igor Volsky, who you might remember from some of our old afternoon shows with Ian Levitt and also Mike McEntee. Igor used to be with Think Progress, but now is with a new organization called Guns Down America. So glad to have you back on AM 950. Igor, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, and so good to be back with you guys.
Absolutely. So tell us about this new organization you're with, Guns Down America. Tell us about what you guys are doing and what you're fighting for.
Well, we formed in 2016, right after the Pulse shooting in Florida, with the intention of pulling large corporations into the fight for gun reform and to make the argument to them that gun reform should be as much a business priority as climate change and diversity issues and everything else corporations now think is critical to their business. And the reason is fairly simple. When you see what happened at Walmart in El Paso last year, when you see what happened just a couple of months ago at the Coors factory in Milwaukee, the truth is businesses are impacted by gun violence every single day. And in the same way that business voices have been critical to helping bring about acceptance of the LGBTQ community, of immigrants, of mainstreaming the idea of going green and being cognizant of climate change, we need their voices and we need their megaphones to help us bring folks together, build the kinds of coalitions we need to really build a future with fewer guns and safer communities.
It's a really interesting way to look at it, because as you brought up, if you look at a lot of Fortune 500 companies or major retailers or really any major corporation, as you said, they've taken steps to be more welcoming of LGBTQ people, among other initiatives. And now, as you guys are saying, you're trying to get them on board with trying to reduce gun violence. And even over the past month or so with the coronavirus, looks like we maybe have a victory with what Walmart is doing in terms of trying to somewhat restrict gun sales. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, we did a lot of work on the Walmart piece. You'll remember that tragic shooting in El Paso in August, I believe on August 3rd of 2019. That was an example of one of the largest workplace shootings in the United States. And when we looked at what Walmart has done on this issue in the past, and that is they, over the last couple of decades, have really minimize the kinds of relationships they have with the gun industry. We felt like, given this unique impact, given the fact that Walmart is the largest retailer in the world, the largest retailer in the country, that if they really prioritized gun reform and stepped away from gun sales, that they would be sending a strong message to businesses around this country, to other retailers, that gun reform is a business priority. And so we launched in August and in early September a multifaceted campaign in coalition with about 20 other organizations that staged rallies at Walmarts all across the country, that urged individuals to deliver letters to managers at local Walmarts asking them to step away from gun sales. We opened up a channel of communication with Walmart executives about this issue. And we're so excited to see in early September, on the 1 month anniversary of the El Paso shooting, Walmart announced that they would be dramatically stepping back from gun sales, that they would begin lobbying Congress on gun reform. And so it was a real proof point of the reality that if you push businesses and corporations in this direction, that because the public is on the side of gun reform and because there's such fear of having your most important corporate asset, your image, your brand associated with guns in the mind of the public, that you could really make some significant progress. And you'll remember that after Walmart made that decision, you had about a dozen other retailers that day or the day after or later that week announce that they too are going to be making some changes when it comes to guns. So, you know, we believe that this work is so incredibly critical to helping bring in the kind of voices we need to truly build coalitions to get things done. Because currently we're in a place where, you know, 98% of Americans support background checks, but we can't get that kind of bill through Congress. The reason is because you don't have the kind of voices you need to give certain politicians cover in order to support those kinds of initiatives.
And certainly Walmart is – that would not have been the company I would have picked to really kind of spearhead the effort for companies to try to scale back their gun sales. But that kind of shows that, yeah, if you can build those types of coalitions, you can even get a company like Walmart, which typically hasn't been very friendly to progressive causes, on board with trying to, well, scale back their gun sales.
Yeah, that's right. And I just have to say that Walmart victory really pushed us to look broadly in the retail sector. We launched a campaign late last year called Business Must Act, businessmustact.org, where we graded all of the country's largest retailers on how far they've gone in keeping their customers and their employees safe from gun violence, and are going to be in the process of pushing those retailers to really go further. So folks could check out that site, could see how their favorite retailers stacked up, and can on that site there push them to go further.
Well, talking about building coalitions to try to scale back gun sales, one of the areas where we also saw some victories, of course, was in the Virginia state legislature. Now, as soon as they passed a number of new gun reform laws, we, of course, saw a number of protests in Virginia. And the perception I often saw in the mainstream media was that, oh, that the legislature is going against the will of what Virginians want. But as you guys posted over at your organization, Guns Down America, turns out a lot of these initiatives that were passed are quite popular with the public.
Oh, they're overwhelmingly popular. I mean, you look at what happened in Virginia. They passed five reforms that, as I rattle them off to you, you'll think, wait, these aren't laws already, right? So they expanded background checks to almost every single gun purchase. They reinstated a rule that you could only purchase one handgun a month. They said that if you leave your gun in the presence of a child, you're going to have to pay a higher fine. They established an emergency risk protection order system so that if a judge finds that you're at risk to yourself or to your family members, your guns can be temporarily taken away from you. And then there's another one that I'm not currently remembering, but the package of these laws were incredibly popular all across the state. You'll remember in 2019, Democrats ran on gun reform, took over, completely painted blue the legislature in Virginia, advanced those measures, and public opinion polls at the time showed, you know, north of 80% support for these kinds of reforms. And so when you hear the president, as he did just a couple of weeks ago, talking about Virginia taking away people's Second Amendment rights, that's a whole bunch of baloney and garbage, frankly, that's designed obviously to rally up his base, but has no real roots in the truth and has no real roots in terms of how actual Virginians view what was done in their state.
I'm not sure if you can answer this, Igor, but I know you're a good political mind. But before even Trump came into office or ran for president, I didn't think he was necessarily a progressive or a conservative or anything. So do you think he really even cares about the gun issue whatsoever? Or is he just doing this to, of course, appease his supporters?
Well, look, I think what we know about Trump is that it's less important what his beliefs on an issue are, and more important whether or not he believes pressing a certain issue button will activate the coalition he needs in order to stay in power, right? And what we know about the gun issue is that it's really the centerpiece of the Republican political coalition. That's something that began to happen in the 1980s historically. And so he's a smart political mind. And so he, you know, understands how to kind of juice that algorithm in order to really get people riled up about this stuff.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah, I'm not sure whether he really cares about the issue, but as you said, he certainly cares about rallying his base, and that's probably what mm-hmm. he's doing by trying to say, oh, we need to liberate Virginia and get rid of these gun laws that are over-intrusive and things like that. And that was part one of my conversation with Igor Volsky of Guns Down America. Coming up on the other side of the break in part two, we're going to be talking about the increase in panic buying of guns with what's happening with COVID-19. That's on the way next on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. Welcome back to FYI Politics with Brett Johnson on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. So we're speaking with Igor Volsky of Guns Down America. Now, in the last segment, we were talking about some of the good news we've seen with organizations and businesses trying to, well, reduce gun sales and try to increase gun safety measures. Unfortunately, though, not all of the news that has to do with guns today is good news. So in this segment, we're going to be talking about the increase of panic buying of guns. So let's get back to my conversation with Igor. Want to move on to some other news regarding what's been happening with guns amid the COVID-19 pandemic. And you brought up some pretty shocking stats about the number of panic buying or the amount of panic buying we've been seeing with guns over the past month. And this is unbelievable as you compare March of 2019 to March of 2020. If I read that correctly, we've seen double the gun sales from March of 2019. Yeah. That is depressing and shocking.
Yeah, that is both depressing and shocking. You're absolutely right. We began to see in early March all of these reports about folks lining up around the block at gun stores in order to make purchases. They were responding, frankly, to the fear of the coronavirus, to the fear that society might crumble, that police might not respond to calls as fast as they have in the past. And so what we know from FBI data is that we had about 1 million more background checks conducted in March of 2020 than we did in March of 2019. And even though there's no real data on this, what we believe anecdotally, at least, is that a lot of these gun purchasers were first-time buyers. And by definition, that means that they don't really know how to use a gun. They don't really know how to store a gun. And so what we're expecting, and frankly, experts in this field anticipate, are fairly significant spikes in suicide, in unintentional shootings, in domestic violence. All of that is, of course, only increased when you think about the economic stress people are now facing as a result of this pandemic. The unemployment troubles, the mental and emotional stresses, and you connect to it the fact that in 48 states in this country, you've had reports of significant spikes in calls to domestic hotlines. That's incredibly dangerous. So, this virus, has killed almost 60,000 people now in the United States. And what I'm very concerned about is that you're going to see, even after the pandemic is over, a spike in gun deaths that are related, sadly, to the panic buying we've seen.
And going back to something you talked about just a couple of minutes ago, the fact that most of these buyers, or a large portion of them, are first-time gun buyers or first-time potential gun buyers. And with what's happening right now with social distancing and restrictions on large gatherings, that probably means, well, as you talked about, they don't know how to store their guns properly, but also they can't receive the type of proper training that they probably need, being that you can't go to gun classes in public or possibly even go to shooting ranges. So, yeah, a lot of these guys are probably getting guns and having no idea how to use them and not even going through the proper classes to learn how to even use your gun in the first place.
And the other piece to point out here is that this administration has gone out of its way to expand access to firearms in the midst of a national pandemic. So the administration deemed gun stores essential in late March. In early April, they issued guidance that allowed gun stores to create drive-throughs on their property and to sell firearms through curbside service.
That's actually legal to do, a curbside gun sale, drive-through gun sale?
Yeah, so long as that sale occurs on the property of the gun store itself. The new guidelines that were issued by the ATF, which is the bureau within the FBI that regulates the gun industry and gun dealers, that they can go ahead and do those kinds of transactions. So, they did those two expansions, and you add to it, we've already discussed this president calling on Americans all across the country to pick up arms and liberate their states. That's a fairly dangerous combination. And, from what we've already seen, I just saw this morning, for instance, that suicide rates in Queens, New York have doubled from where they were last year. You had the UN yesterday issue a warning that you're going to have millions more domestic violence fatalities as a result of this. I remember early on in the late March, there was a story out of Albuquerque, New Mexico, of a man who panic bought a gun, brought that gun home, and accidentally shot his 13-year-old cousin because he didn't realize that gun was loaded. These are the kinds of stories and tragedies we're going to hear about for weeks, months, and years to come. And the other piece of danger, if I may, is the reality here is that the guns people are panic buying today, the over million more sales roughly that we've seen in March, that some number of those guns are going to end up being used in mass shootings in our schools, in our churches, in our bars, because, what we know from mass shootings, particularly in the school setting, is that about 80% of school shooters use guns they find in their homes to commit their acts of violence and mass murder. So this administration's actions and, the industry's efforts and the NRA's efforts to encourage people to panic buy, that is going to sadly directly result, is already resulting and will in the future directly result in more gun deaths.
Couple more questions for you here, Igor, but what has the NRA been encouraging people to do specifically with their marketing campaigns in terms of trying to get people to purchase more guns? I imagine they're not saying that directly. You need to buy guns to protect yourself.
Directly urging people. Back in late March, released...
Yeah, completely getting rid of the veil on that. Wow.
Oh, yeah, there's no veil. Yeah, the veil has fallen. in late March, they created a video with an African-American woman sitting in a wheelchair urging people to buy firearms during this pandemic in order to protect themselves and their households. That was really the beginning of the NRA's campaign to push people to panic buy weapons. Just last week, they published blog post giving folks options for firearms that cost $1,200 or less. And of course, $1,200 is the amount of stimulus that families and individuals are receiving all across the country. They launched earlier this month a website called NRAwomen.com that's underwritten by Smith & Wesson, a gun manufacturer that encourages women specifically to purchase firearms during the coronavirus pandemic. So, this is happening pretty overtly. You add to it the fact that the NRA has sued multiple states, California and New York among them, to force those states to reopen their gun stores during the pandemic. And so they really view this, I think, as a way to rehabilitate their image after, you know, headlines that we've seen over the last couple of years about corruption and overspending and possible violations of tax law. And frankly, the gun industry, which has been in a bit of a slump over the last couple of months, is hoping to use this pandemic to obviously get out of that slump. And for at least for them, for their bottom line, I should say, that has been successful.
One more question for you, Igor. We were talking about how the Trump administration has certainly been making some moves to try to loosen gun regulations. Have we seen any of that type of movement at the state or local level from state legislatures or even local communities, whether that's possibly trying to enforce more gun safety laws or trying to loosen them? What have we been seeing at the state and local level?
Well, what you've seen in certain states are efforts by local gun control local gun advocacy organizations to push states to keep gun stores open, number one. Number two, you've seen these same organizations organize reopen rallies in certain states and attend those rallies brandishing assault weapons. The real issue here is that over the last couple of decades, the NRA has very successfully urged and passed, frankly, on the state level, measures that make it very difficult for localities and for states to regulate firearms. And so we have, for instance, just this week, a case in Jackson, Mississippi, where the mayor of Jackson issued an executive order that would temporarily suspend the open carry of firearms because there's a certain danger associated with that. And now the attorney general of that state is pressuring him to revoke that executive order. And the mayor is now being sued because the Constitution of Mississippi makes it incredibly difficult for the mayor to take such action. So there's that kind of positioning that's happening on the state level. But of course, you know, the overall narrative, of course, they're using is that you need a gun during a period of national pandemic and emergency in order to protect yourself and your family. And we know that the research shows the exact opposite, that guns are almost always dangerous, but especially during stressful periods, they can be, incredibly dangerous.
Yeah, I've never quite gotten the logic behind it. You can't really shoot the coronavirus away. So I've never quite understood why people decide that they need to panic buy guns.
Yeah, I think people, you know, for a long time, really for decades, have been conditioned by the NRA, by the gun industry, to believe that you need a gun to protect your family. And so if something goes wrong and somebody breaks into your house, you have that layer of protection. The truth is, and all of the research almost unanimously shows that in very few cases are individuals able to protect their property with a firearm. And in fact, you are more likely to get out of a situation unscathed if you run away than if you brandish a firearm. And the reason for that is simple, because very few people outside of, you know, maybe law enforcement folks and military folks have the kind of consistent training you need to actually have a positive impact during any kind of confrontation. Usually what happens is that when you brandish a firearm in a defensive way, that firearm is often used against you, or you end up being hurt simply because you don't have the kind of high-level training you need in order to use it in that kind of circumstance. I mean, the fact that police officers all across this country have such a low rate of actually using firearms effectively during a high-speed chase or something like that should tell you everything you need to know about this myth that an individual with zero specialized training can be a hero during any kind of armed confrontation.
Yeah, there's certainly been lots of studies that have shown that that's not true, and I think a big reason why is that, well, if you do end up in a situation where you do have an active shooter approaching you and you have your own firearm, you're not sitting there waiting for that person to come shoot you. It catches you by surprise, and yeah, you generally don't have time to get ready to try to fire back. And I think, wasn't there like a study in Texas that showed that a while back where people were just better off running away?
Yeah, the study I'm thinking about was done by a Harvard researcher, a man by the name of David Hemenway, which, by the way, listeners should go to the Harvard School of Public Health that really has a terrific database of science on gun violence and gun violence prevention. There may have been one in Texas as well. I mean, all of them have been fairly unanimous in the reality that defensive gun use, while it certainly happens successfully from time to time, statistically, the numbers are just so incredibly small.
Yeah, definitely. Hey, that's Igor Volsky. He is with Guns Down America, and you can find more about their organization over at gunsdownamerica.org, doing a great job tracking what's happening amid gun sales with the coronavirus and, well, even outside of that, talking about how they're trying to build coalitions to try to increase gun safety measures around the country. Hey, Igor, really appreciate the time today.
Always a pleasure.